Good morning. Welcome to Power Hour and happy Halloween. I tell you what a fabulous fall we've had. And this time of year is just wonderful. There's so many things to do. And I'll tell you one thing, I'll give you a pro tip here. If you haven't grabbed your tickets yet for the Concours d'Elegance, I would suggest that you do so very, very quickly. Let's give a big shout out today to the Concours board, their staff, and all the volunteers of the tireless and hours that they've been putting in to make that event the phenomenal event that everyone has become as known. So let's get on, get out and get your tickets. Okay. We'd also like to remind you to be ready to vote. If you're a Bluffton resident, we'll be electing two council members along with the mayor. And all Beaufort County voters will also have an opportunity to vote on the proposed $439 million bond referendum for a rapidly growing school system, especially south of the Broad. Here to tell us all about it this morning is a gentleman who is no stranger to Power Hour. Dr. Rodriguez became superintendent of Beaufort County Schools in 2019 and led the district through the pandemic, and he continues to lead students and educators to new heights. Dr. Rodriguez has advocated and fought hard for big improvements in teacher salaries that make us more competitive for teachers in other areas. In fact, this is a great thing to hear because it's been a long time coming. Beaufort County now ranked number one for starting teacher salaries in South Carolina. So that's a heavy lift, and we're glad it's one that has happened. The bond referendum has some ambitious plans, and we're looking forward to hearing all about it. And we know this morning that Dr. Rodriguez is here to share information and not to advocate for or against the school bond referendum. With that said, Dr. Rodriguez, welcome. We're glad to have you, and we look forward to hearing the facts about the school bond referendum.
Thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me once again on Power Hour. In 2019, when the school district had moved forward with a bond referendum, it was the first time in 11 years that the school district had a successful bond referendum. And that $344 million at that time allowed us to get to work on some very much needed projects at that time. And so at that time, I told our community that if that bond referendum passed, that we would set up an independent citizen-led oversight committee to review just how the school district was spending the dollars of the bond referendum and how we were executing on the projects. And so we did just that. I'm proud to tell you that that group has met monthly, and they report quarterly to the community through Board of Education meetings. And I'm proud to tell you that their work really and their commentary on how the school district has executed has been stellar. And really, that was all about community oversight, accountability, leveraging the expertise that exists in our community, as well as building community confidence in our ability to execute on a bond referendum. And so this November, when it came time to think about a referendum phase two, and school districts are passing referendums approximately every 4 years to keep up with capital maintenance needs and projects, especially significant ones, because the state of South Carolina doesn't provide school districts with dollars for capital maintenance needs. That's done through a local level. Well, we put together a community project review committee in December 2.0, we'll call them. And essentially they visited, it was made up of citizens from across Beaufort County, and they visited our facilities and they looked at facility conditions and facility needs, district needs. And they made a prioritized list of recommendations, which I took, looked at that with a facility condition assessment report, and identified needs that the district had, plus speaking with a financial advisor. The question was, how much work could we get done of the needs that existed without raising the millage? And so that answer was a $450 million plus. And so our project list lands just shy of that, which is a $439 million bond referendum. And I want to thank the work of the Community Project Review Committee because they put in over 900 volunteer hours over a 5-month period reviewing our facilities. And so The $439 million bond referendum has the following. It's a rebuild of Hilton Head Island High School. Hilton Head Island High School was on the 2019 bond referendum for architectural work and plans. And so those architectural work and plans are drawn up, and it is on the 2023 November bond referendum for a rebuild of that school utilizing those architectural plans that have been made. So it would be one of the initial projects coming out of the gates. Okay, Ladies Island Middle has a replacement Ladies Island Middle School. Ladies Island Middle School was on the 2019 bond referendum, and that fell off the list when that list got prioritized. So the Community Project Review Committee 2.0 put it back on this referendum. Then the growth in Bluffton, particularly in elementaries, there's a new elementary school in Bluffton that would be on the May River campus. We have space on the May River campus for an additional school there, and that would be an elementary school. And essentially, Pritchardville Elementary is at about 130% capacity. So this would really help alleviate the capacity issues over at Pritchardville, as well as some of the other schools in the Bluffton area. This would be a pre-K to five school. Then there's a Riverview Gym. Riverview is a district charter school. It's not a state charter school. It's a district charter school, and we bear some responsibilities for facilities over at Riverview. And the district charter school, Riverview, is a K-8 school. It's the only middle school in the district that doesn't have a gym, so this would provide that. Career and technical education, such an important component. In career and technical education, Bluffton would receive a career and technical education addition. That was on the 2019 bond referendum, but when the list was prioritized, it fell off the list at that time. And then May River High School also would get a career and technical education space. Hilton Head Island High School gets a career and technical education space through the rebuild of the high school on this referendum. Then, of course, Beaufort High School would also receive an addition and some renovations to its existing career and technical education space at the school. Technology Warehouse Imaging Center, the district serves 21,500 students. It's a one-to-one school district, which means all of our children get a device from the school district. And so this would provide us a small space where we can process and intake devices and clean them and then take in new devices, prep them, image them, and put safety features on them before they go out to the schools for distribution to students. HVAC replacements. We've got HVAC replacements at four Northern Beaufort County schools. One of them would be Port Royal Elementary. The other one would be Beaufort Middle School, Beaufort High School, and then Whale Branch Elementary School. Then there's furniture replacements at three Northern Beaufort County schools. That would be at Port Royal Elementary, at Mossy Oaks Elementary, and at Joseph Shanklin Elementary School. Then there's parking lots, drives, and sidewalks, which are also at three Northern Beaufort County schools, which would cover James J. Davis Early Childhood Center. It would cover St. Helena Elementary School, and it would cover Battery Creek High School. And then there's additional safety and security enhancements. In the 2019 bond referendum, we did a lot of work on safety and security enhancements at schools. This safety and security enhancement, all schools would receive as well. And this is about a sensor on exterior doors to the facility that would notify the main panel if a door is left open or if it's propped open, so that we can identify the location and get someone there to close that quickly. And then it has additional cameras, which would be around the external of the facility, including covering the parking lot spaces. And that comes with a Wi-Fi expansion in order to deliver on that. Then there's a new early childhood center in Bluffton. In Southern Beaufort County, early childhood space is limited. Actually, for our school districts, are pretty much full. So this would allow an expansion. Not only would we expand by having the new elementary school as a pre-K to five, but this new early childhood center would be adjacent to River Ridge School, River Ridge Academy. And we have a piece of property there that's large enough for a early childhood center. And that that would increase the capacity of early childhood education in Southern Beaufort County. And then, of course, Right Choices is the district's alternative school. And at Right Choices, currently, we have to bring food in every morning and at lunchtime for students because we don't have a kitchen on site. So this would provide a small kitchen for food prep, so we don't have to continue to bring meals in from the outside twice a day. That's essentially what's on the $439 million bond referendum, with, of course, that can be accomplished without raising the millage here in Beaufort County. And so, of course, the timeline has been that the Board of Education approved moving forward with that in June. We've been on this information and education sessions, an initiative throughout the community. And then, of course, next Tuesday on November 7th is Election Day. And Bill, I'm happy to take any questions regarding any of the projects. And of course, we have the rebuild of Hilton Head Island High School. So any questions, happy to take.
All right, Dr. Rodriguez, thank you for that. Our first question this morning is coming from Grace. And Grace is asking if you've seen an increase in career and technical education numbers, saying also that today's job market needs that.
Yes, actually, to tell you the truth, there is an increased interest from students. And so these career technical education expansions would allow us to increase our offerings and opportunities for students around career and technical education. You know, flashing back to when COVID hit, some of the career and technical education initiatives and programs that we have require multiple students working together within those. And so that had a limit on some of that at that time because of the social distancing requirements from DHEC. But of course, since that has gone away, we see that rise and increase in student interest around career and technical education, and of course, the opportunity to collaborate with our community around career and technical education is always an important piece.
All right, our next question is coming from Tyler, and Tyler is asking, the look of Hilton Head High School is changing dramatically, and how will that change the student experience?
Yeah, one of the things we notice is buildings that were built before, older facilities were built at a different time with a different mindset. And in education today, one of the critical components is collaborative spaces. And it is not just about collaborative spaces, but it's about using every space within your facility as a possible learning environment space. And so so that is part of I think, the transformation that that we would see. But in addition, I can tell you that the student experience would certainly be different. We just opened Robert Small's Leadership Academy, which is essentially a state-of-the-art school now that utilizes every space as a potential learning space in the school. And one of the things we've seen is a significant increase in the culture and climate of the school from not only faculty and staff, but also the students through their experience in the new facility.
All right. Thank you. Doug is asking or saying, are you saying all these projects can be accomplished with these funds? Seems like it would be a larger cost.
Yes, actually, that's a great question. And what we did was with these projects, what we did was we utilized two cost estimators and asked them to work independently on this project list. They reviewed the project list, they cost out the projects, and essentially they came back very close to one another in their numbers, which gave us a sense of confidence because built into this is they were asked to build into it inflation plus contingency cost as well in order to make sure that we could deliver on this referendum for the $439 million.
All right. Julia is asking, where is the most growth happening and are other schools in Bluffton overcrowded?
Yes, actually, the most growth that we're seeing is definitely happening in the Bluffton area. As I mentioned, Pritchardville Elementary is at 130% capacity. And so We like to run our schools at right around 85% because that provides space for growth, and that provides a space to utilize the learning environment differently and with flexibility. But at 130% capacity, flexibility really honestly goes out the window. So essentially, the growth we're seeing continues to be in the Bluffton area. We're seeing some slight growth in northern Beaufort County, but most of it is really still in the Bluffton area. And other schools are certainly well above that 85% capacity, particularly in the elementary schools. So that is really why we're looking at an elementary school in this bond referendum.
Kevin is asking, what type of security enhancements will be made?
So the additional safety and security enhancements that are a part of this $439 million bond referendum are, number one, it's sensors on all of the exterior doors to the facilities, so that if the doors are left open or propped open, that sends a signal immediately to the main panel in the office, and that notifies us of where the issue is, and we're able to send somebody to look into it and immediately close that door. There is also cameras, additional cameras to also cover more exterior space of the facility, including the parking lot areas. And then that comes with a Wi-Fi expansion in order to deliver on the cameras and security features that we're talking about here. Every school and facility would receive those features, and that would be on top of what they already received in the 2019 bond referendum. In addition, in terms of our safety and security measures, not related to this referendum, but important for you to know as community members, every one of our schools has personnel related to security. So all of our middle schools and high schools have an SRO, school resource officer. But in addition to that, at our elementary schools, half of our elementary schools now have SROs or school resource officers. We've got a good partnership with our law enforcement agencies, and we've been able to, through an academy that they held, identify additional SROs for our schools. So we covered half of our elementary schools. The other half remain, continue to have armed security guard presence until we are able to hire the additional personnel, and then that or they become available, then we would hire them, and the armed security guard personnel would fade away, and all of our schools would then have SROs.
Nicole is asking if there will be additional teacher hiring with this project.
This is a bond referendum. These are dollars are all around capital maintenance projects. So essentially, as a school district, when we open a new elementary school, we would need some additional, obviously, personnel for that new elementary school, but that is not part of the $439 million. That comes out of school operating operation funds. This is all about school debt funds.
All right, Dr. Rodriguez, we have two questions remaining for you. The next one's coming from Doug, and Doug is asking if we can get an idea of how this would affect our property tax bills.
Yes. So currently in school debt fund, if you look at your property tax bill, you would see two things there. One would be school operations, and one would be school debt. School operations is where Act 388 comes into play. That's all about teacher salaries. That's all about school operations. That is separate from this. Of course, in the school operation fund, that's where you get into 4% and 6% with Act 388, right? Where the 4% homeowner doesn't pay into school operation funds, the secondary homeowner or the 6% and businesses obviously do, right? Then what we're talking about here is school debt funds. And on the school debt, it would say right next to that 36.3 mils. That would remain 36.3 mils, okay? That's not going to change as a result of this bond referendum. Now, we've all been through a reassessment. right? And so property values have gone up as a result of reassessment. And so that would be the impact is through reassessment. But in terms of what it is used, it's a 36.3 mils, and that would remain, that would not change. So if your property value went up a little bit, then the 36.3 would show in that increase for that matter. But as the 36.3 mils that is applied to your property value, that 36.3 would remain the same. That would not increase.
Thank you. The last question is coming from Stetson, and Stetson is asking, what do you consider your biggest challenge right now in educating Beaufort County students?
Oh, the biggest challenge right now, we have done a lot of work in the recruitment and retention of educators, right? So you mentioned earlier, Bill, at the onset, the impact of our teacher compensation, right? We went from being 53rd in the state of South Carolina to being number one 2 years ago, and we remain at number one. So we have held on to that now as the really the top paying school district in the state of South Carolina. That helps with teacher recruitment and retention. But the challenge that we face is really around special education and special education teachers. That's where we see the majority of our vacancies is within special education. And then the other thing that really was severely impacted by the pandemic was in mathematics. And so that remains the second challenge that we continue to work at and push on is the mathematics. In language arts, we've actually have exceeded and actually have the highest scores the district has received on the state assessment in language arts. So we've seen great growth there and great progress there. Math across the nation has been the greatest challenge coming out of the pandemic, and that continues to be true. So we continue to work at that and continue to partner with our communities around math instruction and math education to support opportunities for students for improvement. So those are the two areas, special ed in the way of vacancies and overall math for our students.
Dr. Rodriguez, I told you that'd be the last question. Questions continue coming in, so I'm going to do one more. And
happy
this question coming from Lisa, and she's asking, how many years would the community be paying back the bond?
Yep. So these are 20-year bonds that we issue, and so that's the length of the bonds themselves. We pay debt off every year. And so the other thing that we do is we've done a really good job of paying debt off, especially over the last 4 years, which has built greater debt capacity for the school district, which is one of the reasons we're able to deliver on this referendum without raising the millage, right? So the other thing I would add to that is that because of our ability to pay debt and to utilize the dollars we have to pay debt off at a faster rate, we have a AA1 credit rating, Moody's credit rating, which is the highest of any school district in the state of South Carolina. We are tied, actually. We're tied with Greenville for the highest of any school district in the state of South Carolina. And of course, you know, Greenville's economy is more diversified, which gives them a little greater advantage in that area. Yet we're still able to maintain that very high credit rating, which helps our community.
Dr. Rodriguez, that one's a really good one to end on. And we do appreciate your willingness always to come on and talk with us, share information with us. And I know that you'll be glad when Election Day is over.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to share a little bit about Beaufort County School District this morning once again.
Thanks to you and your great team. We appreciate it.
Thank you. You all take care. Have a great day.
All right. It's Dr. Rodriguez, Superintendent of Beaufort County Schools. Next, we're going to transition to talking about our airport. And the Hiltonet Airport is just about to embark on one of its most ambitious projects since its inception. Groundbreaking will be happening soon for phase one of the expansion project, which will add new terminals, improve baggage claim, and streamline security. And here to tell us all about that is Airport Director John Rimbold. John, welcome. Good to see you this morning, and I know you have lots to share.
We do. Thank you, Bill. It's good to be back on. And first, a big compliment to you and the chamber team for keeping Power Hour up and running. It's a great asset to the community. So good job. Keep that moving. I think it's a great way to get information out and give people a chance to interact and get the facts on what's going on. So good stuff there. And then a shout out to Dr. Rodriguez and just what he's got going on with the referendum in the school district. I think it's a great testament to a vibrant community to need to tackle growth, you know, and to deal with growth. And we've got good growth here. We've got, you know, great folks who are in the area and businesses and things that are expanding. So that's a sign of a vibrant community. And we're here to talk about a little bit more growth at the airport today, too. So we're happy to play a role in the economy of the area. We do employ, you know, a good number of people at the airport. And then, of course, that spins off a lot of other employment opportunities based on the folks who are using the airport. So we'll talk about the new terminal project. That's the most exciting thing that we've got going on here. But I want to go back just a couple of years real quickly and tell you how we got to where we are now. If you remember, just a few short years ago, literally like 5.5 years ago, we still had turboprop, or some people call them the puddle jumper airplanes that flew in and out of Hilton Head Island Airport to Charlotte. That was our only destination at the time. And we extended the runway in 2018. And on July 5th of 2018, we had our first regional jets operating at the airport. And we've not looked back since then. We've increased from a single airline to three airlines and in many, many destinations. Some of those are seasonal, but you'll see over the summertime that we're really covering the Northeast very well and branching out into the Midwest and even all the way out to Dallas-Fort Worth to get folks some great nonstops. And then, you know, one-stop connections to get you really anywhere in the world. So really have expanded the opportunities. And the market response to that has been incredible. I mean, Bill, hats off to you and your team. You know, 7 years in a row being the number one island in the U.S. is just incredible. So not that we don't have to market at all at the airport, but it is certainly a lot easier to market an airport that's on Hilton Head Island than it may be in some other places. So great job to the team and a testament to the island and what we all do here to create just an incredible economy and a great experience for folks who visit. That, you know, translates into growth and a vibrant airport. So we felt really at the airport that we need to step up and meet the needs of not only the folks who are coming to visit Hilton Head Island, but also the residents. We like to say that we are the hometown airport, and we want folks who are here to really be comfortable when they use the airport, whether they're going off somewhere to see family or to vacation someplace else if they live here, but then when they return, just to feel, you know, relaxed and at ease when they get here. But then for our visitors, we want them to, you know, as soon as they arrive on the island at our airport, we want them to feel immediately like they're on vacation, that they can relax. You know, travel can be pretty stressful. And so we're going to do our best with this new facility to really kind of take the edge off of the stress of travel. So the terminal is going to be executed in a couple of phases. And it's not inexpensive to build an airport terminal. I've learned a tremendous amount of, you know, cost per square foot prices and what it looks like in the terminal. There's just so much technologically that goes in the bones of an airport terminal. It really drives that price up. So it's tough. We're going to execute it in a couple of phases, like I said. But this first phase, the contract has been awarded to Edison Ford. And that's a big general contractor located in Charlotte, North Carolina. They have significant airport terminal experience, and they've also worked with our design team before on projects. So that is really a good recipe for anticipated success with the project. So we're excited to get that going. We're going to do a groundbreaking real soon on the terminal. It'll be a ceremonial groundbreaking on the airport grounds. And then we expect construction to start. While we don't have a formal schedule yet, we do expect it to start probably right after the turn of the year. And it actually works out for us. It's a little bit of a slower season at the airport. So that'll be good timing to try to, you know, get things started with construction at the airport. Now, the first phase of that project, it's got a big price tag. It's over $30 million. It's $30.8 million is what the contract is. So it's a big big bite at the apple, so to speak. But this first phase is going to include most of the new construction that will happen on the terminal. Just as a point of reference, the existing terminal is about 20,000 square feet. So it's a pretty small place, and that includes the little modular area that we added on a few years ago to accommodate the third airline. But this new one, when it's all said and done, is going to be more than three times the size of what's there now. Now, again, that's not huge as far as airport terminals go. I was just presenting at an engineering seminar at Charlotte last week in their airport. And I think they told me that they were up to, with the new terminal project, there'll be somewhere around 2 million square feet of terminal space. So we're going to be around 65,000 square feet of terminal space. So don't worry, we're not exploding and going crazy with expansion here. But this first phase will include a new security checkpoint. So if you're used to going through kind of that small hallway area that we've got in this older building, you'll get some relief with the new terminal. So we'll have a couple of lanes of security, which will be good. Just a much more, you know, as relaxed as the security checkpoint can be, we'll have you going through there with ease. And then moving straight ahead into the boarding gate areas, and there will be a lot more room there. And basically each one of the boarding gate areas will have as much room as we have in total now. So it's going to be just a lot more room for folks to spread out, different types of seating available. So there'll be some, you know, some more comfortable seating. People can sit and read or do whatever. There'll be some high top seating, kind of bar top like seating, where folks can open up their laptops and do some work while they're waiting. There'll be more opportunities for some small concession areas and things like that. So folks can, once they get through security and kind of relax and wait for their flight, they can find a cup of coffee, or depending on what you like to do, we'll probably have some alcoholic offerings back there as well. So folks can take the edge off if they need to before they get on the airplane, but all kinds of variety of things like that too. Again, on a smaller scale, because we're a smaller airport, but we anticipate having more variety there. So another great addition in this first phase is that we will have two boarding bridges. So the normal jet bridges that you see at airports will be a real big transformation for the Hilton Head Island Airport. And, you know, a lot of people think of, you know, well, we don't have a whole lot of rainy seasons in Hilton Head Island, but it gets pretty warm here in the summertime. And it actually gets pretty cool here in the wintertime. So we will now have the opportunity to allow folks to transition from the terminal building to the aircraft without having to go outdoors. So I think that's a big improvement that we'll have. And as the phases move on, that includes other things like some of the baggage functions and things like that will all be modernized and everything will be undercover. So a much more enjoyable experience from start to finish. So those are some of the biggest improvements that we'll have in this first phase. The main exterior work that will happen in the first phase will be with the roadway that goes in front of the terminal. And as you may know, it's only a two-lane road right now, and it gets pretty congested when people are trying to stop and either drop folks off or pick people up from a flight. And so that roadway will be expanded to four lanes. So that'll allow plenty of room for folks to drop off and pick up. And at the end of the terminal project, when all phases are complete, the entire lane that's closest to the terminal will be undercover. So there'll be lots of room for folks to drop off and pick up without having to be exposed to the weather elements. So definitely a good addition there. So folks have asked us, you know, what can they expect as far as disruption during this first phase, you know, from the passenger experience, and even the employees inside the terminal have asked this. And for the most part, this first phase is going to be fairly non-disruptive, because it will happen. It'll be new construction that is built and then tied into the existing building. But that loop road, that construction will have some impacts on the traffic that goes through, but we'll phase that, and we'll probably have some timing that helps to address some of the issues that can happen with road construction. So I think that's hopefully will be minimized in this first phase, and we'll be able to move pretty smoothly towards completion of that. And I think that's pretty much the data that we've got. And I'd like to just leave some time for questions if folks have questions.
Very good, John. Thank you. And I know you're excited. We're excited, and great things to come there at the Hilton Head Airport. We do have some questions for you today. The first one's coming from Robert, and Robert is asking if there is any truth that the sheriff's office will no longer be providing a police presence at Hilton Head Island Airport.
Well, that's interesting. And we do have the deputies at the airport, and they provide just an outstanding presence there. So we're very proud to have them, and really they're literally part of our local community and certainly part of our airport family as well. So we're always coordinating with the sheriff's office on how to best provide the security services inside the terminal. And that's just an ongoing discussion, and that happens all the time in the course of normal budgeting discussions and manpower discussions. So that's something that we work on constantly. So I wouldn't worry about any rumor mills at this point.
Very good. Matt is asking the next questions, and Matt is asking, saying, I fly frequently out of the airport and security can be a bit slow. What will be done to speed up that process with these renovations?
Yeah, that's a great question. And first, thank you for being a frequent traveler through the airport. We appreciate that. And everybody who works in the terminal appreciates it too, because we are a local small business. So we're glad to have that support. The improvements to the security checkpoint, I think, are going to take care of any of the issues that you've got. Of course, every now and again, you get a backup with an equipment failure or something like that. So as we always say, technology is great when it works. At times, even the TSA equipment does break down and need some repairs. So we had a few issues with that. The challenge with a single lane that like we have now is that when the equipment goes down, you can't just move to a second lane. The difference with the new building will be that we'll have two lanes. So we'll have either a dedicated pre-check lane or a backup lane, or just two lanes flowing at the same time. So I think that's really going to help. And the TSA headquarters for the state of South Carolina, located in Charleston, is already looking forward, and they look at our flight forecasts so that they can staff up. So that way, as we get the building completed, they're ready with enough staff that they can open up those lanes. So that, again, is also a constant discussion with TSA to make sure that we give them the information they need so that they can staff properly and get the right amount of equipment. So if you may have noticed the last couple of years, we have been able to upgrade with TSA's help to the latest and greatest equipment. So that has, streamlined the experience a good bit, because now folks are not having to go through the extended pat downs that happened before. So if you had a knee replacement or something like that, you might have to have the pat down. Now with the new equipment, that doesn't have to happen. So that's streamlined it. But I think the short answer to your question is we'll have an extra lane. So we'll have a little bit of assistance with that.
Thank you. And Stu is asking if you can provide who the design architect and engineer are.
Oh, absolutely. Great question. We've been real lucky, and I'll give you the names and then tell you a real quick story. But the architect firm is called the Wilson Group, and they're in Charlotte. And they are a part of our master consultant team that's led by Talbot Brighton Ellington out of their Charlotte office as well. So they kind of come together as a team with us. But what's exciting about this project is when we first started really kind of the visioning process in 2018 and 19, we sat down with the architects, with the engineers, and with a huge group of community stakeholders. So we had folks, we had a couple elected officials on there. We had folks from our chambers of commerce. We had members of the airports board. We had members of the business community involved, and a few kind of at-large citizens who formed a big stakeholder group. And as we put together the initial visions, literally working with Sharpie markers and things like that to figure out the different functions of the terminal and what it should look like and feel like, that group had a significant amount of impact on what the design ended up being. So it's really a fun project because there's so many stakeholders, not any one of them can raise their hand and say, this is my design. So the architects took all that community input and then were able to incorporate it into the design.
Scott is asking if there's any opportunity for a passport club inside the terminal.
Well, that's a good question. We hadn't really thought about that yet, and we'd need to coordinate that with the airlines to see what they might want to expand. So I think it's a good thing to look into as we really try to elevate the level of the experience, not just for us and our customers, but for our main tenants, who are the airlines. So that's an interesting concept. We may take a look at that.
All right. Doug is asking, how far from the current terminal will the new building be located?
Good question. Thanks for asking that. The new terminal is actually going to be in the same footprint. So we'll expand the footprint. And like I said, the first phase is going to have most of the new construction. But as we move on to subsequent phases, the existing building is going to be completely renovated and expanded. So the footprint is going to expand a little bit, but it's going to be in the exact same location that it is now.
All right. Nicole is asking, what are the additional phases and how long will the project take to complete?
I'm going to have to consult my crystal ball for that one, but we're all asking that question. I am hoping that it's only one more phase that it takes to get this done. A lot of that depends on the funding, and that comes together through various grant programs. We work real closely with the FAA. They've been kind of the major contributor, but we've also had our state delegation, you know, our local reps to the state delegation really do some heavy lifting for us in Columbia. And they understand the impact of this airport on tourism and to the local economy. So really hats off to them for what they've been able to do to get really about $15 million towards this project. So it's been great to have the delegation work like that. So if you're in touch with your local reps, thank them. So that's, you know, Jeff Bradley, Weston Newton, Bill Herb-Kurzman, Shannon Erickson, Tom Davis, they've been incredibly instrumental in getting this funding. So the answer to the phasing question is it really depends on what that next tranche of funding looks like. We continue to apply for more grant opportunities through the FAA and through the U.S. Department of Transportation. We also look at things similar to what Dr. Rodriguez talked about. You know, there are opportunities for the airport to look at, you know, revenue bond options and things like that. So we're looking at all opportunities, and that will shape, you know, what the phases look like moving forward. I'm very hopeful that it's only one more phase. So there would be a complete two-phase project. And if all goes the way John Rimmel thinks it should go, then the phases will overlap. In other words, we would secure funding and be ready to move through that final phase while the first phase is ongoing. So that would take us start to finish maybe 3.5 to 4 years to have everything complete. So in a perfect world, we're looking at, 4 years, probably, you know, early to mid 2028 if all the stars align.
All right. Thank you. We've had several questions asking about if the new terminal will also, if we'll have new flights, new routes, new airlines. And I'll sum it up with a question from Andy. American through Charlotte is our only year-round service. Has Delta or United committed to year-round service once our new terminal is completed?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And it's something that I work on quite a lot of the time. And you may or may not know that there's a very challenging pilot shortage right now. And we all saw this coming pre-COVID, and we had been up in Washington, D.C. trying to talk to them about some of the regulations that you know, govern the pilot training programs and things like that, because we saw this coming as an industry. And then when the pandemic hit, that exacerbated and accelerated the pilot shortage, because you may recall the airlines were having to offer early retirements and things like that to a lot of their higher paid pilots. So that really hurt the industry from a staffing standpoint. All that to say that since we're a pretty small airport, and at this point really can only accommodate the smaller aircraft, the regional jets, it's even more challenging for us because the airlines, if you've been following, have been offering some major pay raises to what's called their mainline crews. So those are the folks flying the larger aircraft at the bigger airports. So those folks are being, those pilots and flight crews are being incentivized to upgauge, to move to larger aircraft and maybe move to different places to operate. And that is putting a tremendous draw on what used to staff the regional airlines. So it's becoming just a real tough time getting flight crews. These airlines are having a hard time lining those up. And what that means now is that the airlines have to make decisions on where they put those airplanes and where they put those flight crews at different parts of the year. So you may see, some mountain traditional ski resorts who may get fewer flights and less service in the summertime because those are coming to us. And then on the other side of that, as we slow down from our summer season, some of our flights may change out to resort destinations like that. So airlines right now are having to make that kind of decision based on manpower and just staffing issues. But to answer your question about additional flights and airlines and things like that, definitely something that we'll continue to work on, but it's our hope that having a more modern facility that's got a lot more room, a lot more flexibility, and that the folks who work for the airlines can be more comfortable in, then that will kind of incentivize the airlines to take a closer look at Hilton Head Island Airport and add to their offerings. We saw some of that at the end of COVID, and then those were kind of some transitional flights. But some of those did really well. So I think the airlines got some good data points and they were able to kind of plug that into their master programming system. But we work nonstop, believe me, to talk to these airlines, look at new airlines, have folks come down and try to look at the airport and see what they could do. So we'll continue to try to expand those offerings just because we feel that more options in the market are better for our consumers.
John, the questions continue to come in. However, we have time for one more, but what that tells me is we're going to need to have you back on real soon again. There's a lot of interest. The last one's coming from Jean Marie, and Jean Marie is saying that you've acquired a lot of buildings and space along Hunter Road, and how will that be used for the expansion?
That's a good question. Thanks. It shows me you're really plugged in what's going on. And yes, we have. We've acquired the properties that are immediately adjacent to the airport. So what that means is now with the airport property goes right up to Hunter Road for the most part, except for the property located on the corner of Hunter Road and Beach City Road. What that allows the airport to do as this expansion of the terminal happens, and hopefully an increase in the number of customers who come in and out of the airport, is we'll expand some parking areas. But we've also tried to basically have a little bit of flexibility so that if that terminal in this first phase of the terminal is designed to potentially expand if it needs to in the future, if that expansion happens, now we've got land that will work for not only the building, but to meet stormwater requirements and things like that. So, you know, the land is needed for not just the building, not just the airplane parking, but sometimes stormwater and utilities and things like that. Some of the buildings now are actually serving our security department and our maintenance department. So we're able to keep all of our equipment under cover and make sure we've got a good security badging office. Some of you may have been through there to get your badges. We've also got a little bit of space on 30 Hunter or at 30 Hunter Road that we're able to lease to the contractor, so that they can operate out of that building immediately adjacent to the project site without needing to bring in a project trailer. So they've got secured storage in the back of their building for some of their equipment and materials, and they've also got some office space so that they can do their administrative work while they're executing the project. So we've been able to rent some of that space out, which is great because it generates revenue for the airport to support the activities and the improvements that we need to make. So until such time as we have to demolish any of those buildings and expand, we'll keep them, you know, available for some businesses or for contractors to come in and use those and generate some revenue.
John, it's been terrific information. Thank you for sharing. And as I said, we'll look forward to having you back on again real soon so we can learn some more about the project.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon and morning. All right. So we've covered education, we've covered transportation, air service. And so now we're going to cover one more topic this morning, which is workforce. And we all know how important that is to our area. And it's certainly a critical challenge, not only for our area, but for areas all over the country. And I want you to know that the Chamber is really working on some creative partnerships on a number of fronts. One of those is working with Hiring Our Heroes, a program affiliated with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, focused on supporting transitioning service members with their career goals through different fellowship opportunities. Here to tell us all about that this morning is the Corporate Fellowship and Program Manager for the program, Craig Weimer. Craig, welcome. And we're looking forward to hearing your information this morning.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you. And happy Halloween, everyone. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with all of you today. Yes, that's correct. We are a part of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're a 501c3. We've been around for about 12 years now, and we are nationwide. We help service members when they're transitioning from the military to participate in a fellowship or internship with host companies nationwide that are 12 weeks long. These fellowships are designed to help them with their transition to the civilian workforce and cover, you know, all different work areas and career fields. Our service members are diverse in their educational background and their work background. And a lot of great companies around the country have taken notice of this and participate in our program regularly. We do offer three cohorts a year. We have service members work with the host company Monday through Thursdays. Fridays, we do some professional development with them in the morning, and then we give them some time to do some transition stuff for their to their personal life. We help the companies match with these fellows by providing them a link to all their resumes, a spreadsheet that will break down their areas of interest, their backgrounds, their degrees, foreign languages, certifications, things like that. We also do hiring events nationwide and online throughout the year. And our events can be registered for 90 days in advance. So I know we've had a lot to cover this morning, so I wanted to keep it about 5 minute introduction, and then happy to answer any questions any of you might have about the fellowship program and how we can match you with some great service members for your companies.
Thank you, Craig. Ted is asking, where should I go to find your website?
Sure. So for our fellowship program, it's just hiringourheroes.org.
All right. Thank you. Anita is asking, do companies of every size work with the program? If a business wants to get involved, again, how do they do it?
Yeah, you can go to our website and just fill out an initial interest, and we'll get someone in touch with you. We do have two branches to the program. We have one for those that are college educated, and we have one for those that maybe haven't finished their degree yet, or they're just starting college. So we have a skills-based fellowship program for those without degrees, and we have our corporate fellowship program for those with degrees.
Christian is asking if spouses can participate.
That's a great question. We do have a spouse fellowship program as well. And our spouse programs, as some of you might know, military spouses are underemployed oftentimes in a lot of parts of the country. They're highly educated, very resilient, and also have great educational backgrounds. excuse me. We do have our spouse program releases resumes monthly, whereas our fellowship program for service members releases resumes three times a year. And that schedule is on our website. But yes, we do have a spouse fellowship program, very similar.
All right, Craig. Susie is asking if there's any assistance with the program to finish their degrees.
So we don't directly focus on education. There are definitely other organizations that do that. And some of our partner companies also have educational assistance that they build into their packages.
All right. Phil's wondering how many veterans have been connected to jobs.
I have a ton of numbers. 53,000. We're served through our organization in 2022. 9,000 of those were military spouses, 18,000 were veterans. We've had since last year, 2,300 have participated in our fellowship programs. I also have our average salary for the fellowship program is 109,000 nationwide. On our spouse side, 73,000. In terms of our hiring events, we've had 37,000 attend our hiring events in person and virtually.
Thank you, Craig. Shane is asking how long the program has been in existence.
For 12 years. We started at Joint Base Lewis-McChord in Washington State. That's right outside Tacoma, and we've expanded from there to be nationwide.
All right. Nicole is asking, she's curious to the number of veterans looking for an employment in our area, if you can comment on that.
Yeah, it changes cohort to cohort, because service members transitioning out or retiring from the military, they might decide to move somewhere else. They might decide to come back to South Carolina. Generally for South Carolina that are participating in our fellowship program, it's around 25-30 each cohort, and that are willing to stay in South Carolina. And oftentimes they'll tell us they're open to Columbia, Charleston, Hilton Head. Some of them are open to more than one state. We do give them the opportunity to pick two locations. So that information would be readily available to you in our spreadsheet. Their preferences would be included, so you could see what areas of your state that they were interested in.
All right, one last question for you, coming from Randy. And Randy's saying, we live in an area with a strong military presence. How involved, are our local bases in the program?
Yeah, that's a great question. So to participate in this, the service members have to have approval from their bases or installations. You do have some Marine installations there in South Carolina, and you're not too far from Savannah, where Fort Stewart is and Hunter Army Airfield. So typically what will happen is there is a paperwork approval process that they need to handle and have their leadership sign off on to participate in this. So as long as they're in their last 180 days of service to the military and they're active duty still, they can still participate in our program as long as they get approval from their leadership and their installation.
Craig, it's a terrific program, and we look forward through our partnership of putting more veterans to work right here in the Lowcountry. I want to thank you for what you're doing, and also thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the support.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today. I just want to remind everyone that Concours d'Elegance this weekend, you don't want to miss it. Grab your tickets now if you don't have them, and just get out and enjoy this fabulous weather that we're having. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. See you soon.